You are listening to a sermon by Curtis Funk, recorded on Sunday, September 22, 2019, at the Point Grey Interminenite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The recording has been edited for brevity. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
I turned the key in the stillness of the morning, and it was shattered by the uneven rumble of the engine. Everything was ready for the day's work. In a few minutes, a pickup would drive onto the farmyard and empty its load of Mexican laborers. But for now, I was alone. I eased the clutch out and the tractor lurched forward into motion, pulling my portable packing shed behind it into the orchard. Then, as the sun's rays appeared over the Sierra Nevada mountains, illuminating the vast valley, the beauty of this new day struck me. And over the incessant chug, chug, chug of the tractor, I burst into song. When morning gilds the skies, my heart awaking cries, may Jesus Christ be praised. Thanks for singing this favorite song of mine. I learned it at Tabor College. I grew up in a church that sang gospel songs, and I'd never heard that song before I sat in chapel at Tabor College. I love its ascending line. Dee, 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 dee. La, da, 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 da. That ascending line showing the rising of the sun and the rising of God's Spirit in our lives. It has a little bit of an uneven phrase structure, but you probably don't notice it. It's so well written. In fact, hymns are miniature works of art that draw us in and enrich our lives. And of course, the main focus, may Jesus Christ be praised. Why do we sing hymns anyway? Helmut and I just chatted about that, and I've asked a couple of you at other times, why do we sing hymns? Well, Evan referenced a couple of psalms when he read shortly ago, and they seem to give us a commandment, an admonition, that we should sing. But I think we do it regardless, right? What is special about singing? Well, I think we do it because there's something uniquely meaningful and purposeful about singing in a congregation. We all sing individually, yet our corporate activity puts together something that I would call a gestalt. It's greater than the sum of its parts. And then when we get to add an instrument, four voices perhaps, alto, tenor, bass, and maybe others, maybe noisy instruments too, there is something that is wholly other that's possible. It doesn't always happen, but it does happen often. I think singing together is the best medium for worship. It's the only thing that we do together in this unique kind of grouping of a worship service. Psalm 96 says, ascribe to the Lord glory that's due his name. Bring an offering and enter his courts. Worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness. Tremble before him, all you earth. A couple of weeks ago, we had a really full house with all the students here, and Veronica led us in the song, Come, We That Love the Lord. I don't know if you remember that, but I do vividly. because the room was full of sound. And little did Veronica know that I wanted to sing that song this morning, so we'll sing it again. And I'd like to say a little bit about this song. If you wish to turn in your hymn books, you could look at it while I do that. I think it's 14.
It is.
This was a favorite song of my mother. I grew up hearing her sing this. And it's one of the songs of my childhood growing up in a Nazarene church that I still love and retain. It's a song about Zion. Now, if you have had any biblical training, you know that there are 15 ascent psalms in the book of Psalms that are to be read or sung in a pilgrimage to Zion, that is, to Jerusalem. And there is also a reference, of course, in Revelation of people singing to the Lord around the throne, and speaking of the heavenly city of Jerusalem, the heavenly city of heaven, as Zion. So this is a metaphor for pilgrimage, for our Christian pilgrimage, our quest to reach that heavenly kingdom. Now, this is a fun song to sing, and Isaac Watts wrote 10 verses to this song. I think we only have, four in our hymn book. If you look in your bulletin, I have added another one that I'd like to sing. It's somewhat humorous. If you could read all 10 verses that Isaac Watts wrote for this, you'd understand why we don't sing some of them. So I'd like to have Evan lead us. We'll sing the first verse as is, and then if you would insert, you can shuffle between the bulletin and your hymn book, the second verse, which is there, "The sorrows of the mind be banished from this place. Religion never was designed to make our pleasures less." Let's sing that, and then I will come back and talk to you.
Do you want just two verses, or...?
No, let's do more.
So we're going to do two verse twos. We'll do the bulletin two first, and then we'll do the hymnal two. Number 14. I invite you to stand.
Please keep your book open to this. This is fun to sing, isn't it?
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of hymns that have this bouncy rhythm, and we could actually say it's fun to sing. A lot of times our hymns are very meditative, and in fact, much of contemporary hymnody that's been developed doesn't have any of this kind of rhythm in it. This is why it's so joyful. I must admit a type of idolatry. And that is, music draws me in way before the words. I'm much more interested in the music of the church than in the words of the church. I apologize for that idolatry. What is it about that ascending line that we sang in "When Morning Gilds the Skies"? You'll find it in many hymns. Ascending lines, lifts our spirits. What is it about this rhythm? Da-da-da-da-da-da. You feel like dancing. We're all too staid to do that, right? What about the harmony? Look at this refrain, which actually Robert Lowry added after the fact. Now, even if you can't read music, you can note something. If you follow the bass line on the refrain, notice how boring it is. We're marching, marching to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion. Not really interesting, is it? Marching upward to Zion, the beautiful city of God. There are only three chords used in that refrain, and the chord that shifts, we call it a four chord, on second system, second measure, when the melody soars to the top, the harmony changes. So not only does the melody give us a sense of lift, but the chord itself is new to that refrain. Let's sing the refrain again. Oh, and by the way, can I have you accent "Beautiful City"? That's the rhythm. Let's do that chorus again. Notice how that chord comes in the second system of the refrain. Just a So the music itself is the vehicle for praise, not just the text, but the music itself. And good hymns give us that sense of joy and climax and draws us in. And I want to direct you to another type of way for me that music enhances and enlivens the text. Turn to 573. Is there anyone in this congregation that doesn't know this text? I'm sure we've all heard it, and perhaps in our youth, those of us who are old, have sung it often enough. Now you'll notice on 573, 574, the two versions, on the right-hand side is the one that we probably all grew up with. And again, you don't have to be a musician. If you just looked at the music, you notice something rather unique. Every line's rhythm looks the same. All right? Dee da dee da 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 is the rhythm. Dee da 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 da. Dee da 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 da. It's the same. Okay? Now I'll admit, I am bored to tears with that tune. It's also in 4/4 meter. Now look at 573 across the page, and you see a different meter, 3/4, which is sometimes thought of as a waltz meter, and a totally different melody. As we set the old texts that are so ho-hum and texts that we just take for granted to the new tune, all of a sudden, new ideas of meaning emerge. Let's sing the new one, 573. Evan, would you please? I think all of us are longing for transcendency in our lives. This passage we just heard of the dedication of the temple in Jerusalem demonstrates the beauty of everything coming together for a transcendent moment. Now, of course, the Hebrew people have been waiting for a temple for years and years and years. So it was great expectation that they came. And you'll notice that all of these instruments were gathered together, and when everything was just right, the house of the Lord was filled with a cloud, so much that the priests couldn't do their work. This transcendent moment probably will not be repeated for us, at least not very often. But I suspect you've had some of those moments. I feel sorry for you if you've never had one of those moments. In the spring of my freshman year, that's an American term, isn't it? In the spring of my first year at college, at Tabor College, I was sitting in the bass section as the choirs of Tabor College, Bethel College, and Heston College, the three little Mennonite colleges that couldn't somehow get together and be one in central Kansas. All three choirs were gathered together at Bethel College to sing Brahms' Requiem. And in the fifth movement of that seven-movement work that begins, "All flesh is as grass, and all the goodliness of man is like the flower of grass that fades away." And then the text goes on, "But the word of the Lord endures forever." And because of that, we as believers shall go up with joy to Zion. in the middle of the rehearsal, the dress rehearsal for this performance, as we sang, "Joy Everlasting." The power of God's Spirit was so present, the conductor put his baton down and just stood there. And not only I, but everyone around me sensed something special. And we sang our hearts out. "Joy everlasting shall be upon our heads." This was the text. Well, I haven't had an experience like that much since. But these miniature hymns that we sing every Sunday have the potential to take us into a moment of transcendency, a moment of the sublime. The sublime is an unexpected sensation of awe that we receive. There's lots of scientific work done to say, what is it about music that makes this happen to us when we are participating like that? But I'm not going to bore you with the science. First of all, I'm not a scientist, so I don't have a good way of describing that. But I think much of our hymns that we sing have the potential to move us into a moment of sublime expression. I don't know whether last week you noticed a sublime moment. I did. We heard a wonderful sermon on prayer, and we had this very enriching dialogue in response to that. And then we closed the service with a little Taizé song, one that has never moved me before. The song was, "Lord, hear our prayer." Do you remember that? Do you remember the hushed moment at the end? How hushed it was? For a brief moment, I hope some of you, but I felt a holiness, a presence that doesn't normally happen. So our hymns have this potential to bring us into a moment of transcendence. I've picked a couple of hymns that, for me, have this potential. The first one is a very common hymn that many of us grew up with in your hymn book. The second one is out of the Green Book. Evan will lead both of these. These are quite contrasting in style. The first is a very straightforward, "Oh, worship the King, all glorious." Very straightforward, kind of like a little bit of a march. But it extols the qualities of our God. The second is very intimate. It's Mary's response to being told she would be the mother of Jesus. "My soul is filled with joy." And on the refrain, Mary and the writer of this text lifts the holiness of God, the holy is his name, as our refrain. Would you indulge me with an a cappella version of the refrain?
"And holy is your name through all generations. Everlasting is your mercy to the people you have chosen.
The chosen." This next section I entitled "What I Discovered at College." And as I was working on today's service, I discovered that college was really, really, really important to me. I guess I knew that already. I found my dear wife there. What more could I say? But I also learned a lot outside of the classroom and in things, places like chapel, believe it or not. One of the things I discovered was my roots. Now, most of you know I grew up with Mennonite parents, but in a Nazarene church. I didn't know much about Mennonites except some foods that my mother made. And that they occasionally spoke Low German, and I didn't know why. But when I got to Tabor College, I discovered a little bit of who I was. I discovered a theology that said, we're on a journey. Being part of church isn't like joining a club. It's a pilgrimage with fellows that are on the same journey. In Hebrews, we read about these great saints of old. And the writer of Hebrews says that they are on a journey looking for a homeland, a city whose builder and maker was God. This was a new idea for me. And along with that discovery, I discovered a bunch of hymns that I had never known. They're very simple hymns. And I discovered that there was a man in Winnipeg by the name of Ben Horsch who championed these hymns. He called them Karenlied. I think Karen must mean colonel, right? And Lied, of course, is song, a German word. We don't have many of those in our hymn book. The Mennonite Brethren had a hymn book some years ago that had maybe 10 or 15 of them in it. We do have a couple of those. One we sing frequently, we won't sing today, is "The Lord is King, oh praise His name." That's number 69. And we will sing another one in the hymn book, but I'd like to draw your attention now to the handout that has the "Thy Blessed Image, Savior." Thy Blessed Image, Savior. This is one of those Karenlied. I first heard it as "Es schaut bei Nacht und Tage," which is the German. I would guess that there's a few of you who could sing the whole German from memory. Who of you could do that? At least a verse of "Es schaut bei Nacht." Yeah, I see a few hands. These are very simple little hymns. They are folk in folk style. Many of them begin with this da 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 da, da this pickup. And I think it's because of the German language that rhythm is part of the hymn. I will admit, I learned it first singing it in German, and the German is much better than the English. It just fits better. But since we don't all sing and speak German, and I don't really either, we'll sing... Yes, that's too bad, isn't it, Helmut? We'll sing it in English. And maybe I should say nothing else, but let's sing "Thy Blessed Image, Savior." And then the other one as well.
And now take your bulletins and turn to the text Ephesians 5. Three readings, Ephesians 5.
Scriptures like this one are common from the Apostle Paul. Injunctions on how to live. Some of us call that pietism. Pietism at its best draws us to God in a personal, experiential way. Pietism at its worst tells us all the do's and don'ts that we should be watching out for. And I grew up, as probably many of you, in an atmosphere of pietism, sort of navel-gazing. Am I spiritual enough today? Our hymnody is full of pietistic references. And it's not hard to open the hymn book and find songs of aspiration. By that I mean songs that express our desire to be better as people, to be more holy, to be more like Jesus. Certainly a desire we should all have. And so I want to sing a couple, perhaps one or two, our time is fleeting by, one or two hymns out of our hymn book that reflect this pietism. The first one, I think, which one should we leave out? We have not time for them all.
We sing "O Jesus, I Have Promised." Does that work?
Yeah, let's sing "O Jesus, I Have Promised," 447. The idea of a desire to... enter into a devotional, experiential relationship with God, one that is not understood as simply an intellectual assent. That is the nature of these pietistic hymns. So let's sing together 447, O Jesus, I have promised.
Just give us the first line. And the reading from Philippians 2 in your bulletin.
So what's important after all? For me, hymns should point to the central message of our faith. Jesus is Lord. Indeed, Jesus asks this central question of his disciples, who do you say that I am? And today we sing as Jesus' followers and declare that he is Lord. To me, this is the central message of our hymnody, or ought to be the central message. There's a story recorded in all four Gospels with considerably different details in each of the Gospels, so much so that they may be different stories, actually, of a woman, some Gospels say a sinful woman, that's all of us, right? Who, sitting by Jesus when he was having lunch with some Pharisees, started to cry. And the tears fell on Jesus' feet. So, what did she do? She had long hair, obviously, and wiped the tears away with her hair, and then pulled out a very expensive jar of perfume and anointed Jesus' feet. Now, it's a custom that we don't have. I'm not even sure how that custom was applied in Jesus' time. But here was a woman who recognized Jesus as Lord. And without words, at least none that are recorded in the scriptures, she simply showed her worship. The new hymn book that the Mennonite Church is producing has in it a song written by a Korean man called To My Precious Lord. You'll see it in your music book. And I think we should learn it and sing it. So we're going to begin by having Rebecca play a verse of it, too. And then, since it was written by a Korean in Korean, we have some Korean speakers with us, and they're going to sing a verse of it in Korean. By that time, the rest of us who don't speak Korean will know the melody and can sing what's written on the page. So let's sing together, To My Precious Lord.